Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop on Washington. I am your host, Mark Levine, and I'm reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I was at a conference the other day, and I was on a radio row, as I am wont to do, and, taking guests and listening to them and stuff like that. And I overheard another radio host talking about, well, the Democrats, talking about the Democratic Party, talking about progressives, liberals. And what this guy said was, you know, they don't believe in anything. They are constantly attacking Trump and talking about Russia and collusion. But what are their principles? What do they stand for? We don't know. And I kept thinking, well, he's an idiot. What do you mean you don't know? How can you not know? How can you not know what Democrats believe in, what progressives believe in? We've believed it only for about 240 years. Today I want to talk about what we believe in. I want to make clear that the Democratic Party is and progressives believe in things. We believe in far more than that this corrupt government should not stand. We have solid principles, and the principles date back to the founding of this country, date back to the Declaration of Independence. What do we believe in? That's going to be the focus of today's show. And if you're watching on Facebook, you can see that I'm pulling out my Constitution. My Constitution actually also has the Declaration of Independence, because what we believe in dates back to the very founding of the country. Declaration of Independence, of course, is older than the Constitution, drafted in 1776 by Thomas Jefferson and approved by Congress. And the most famous part of the Declaration of Independence is, of course, the line I'm about to read. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Goes on to say that, when the government doesn't treat its people right, the people have a right to form a new government. The point of the Declaration of Independence, of course, is that these are human rights. These are rights endowed by our Creator. They belong to humanity. They don't belong to any one person. They don't belong to any one people. They don't belong to any one group. They don't belong to the powerful. They belong simply to the nature of being human. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute, Mark. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. And what's all this men stuff? What about women? Aren't they equal too? You know, what we believe in, what the founders believe in, that's 240-year-old crazy ideas. And therein, first, lies the difference between liberals and conservatives into the ideas of what we believe in. See, we liberals, or I guess I should just speak for myself, Mark Levine, I believe in the words. We believe words have meaning. We believe that words outlive the people who wrote them. We believe that definitions matter. Words matter. If you're going to have a Constitution, if you're going to have a Declaration of Independence, the words matter more than the people who wrote them. I don't have to defend Thomas Jefferson. I thought he wrote some great ideas down in the Declaration of Independence. That doesn't mean that he always pursued them. Certainly not with his slave ownership. Certainly not when he had sex with Sally Hemings. Certainly he did not include women here. But the general point is self-evident. To quote the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident. This is an axiom of politics, like an axiom of mathematics. A equals A. It's self-evident. You don't have to prove it. We are all created equal. When he said all men, well, men in 1776 was supposed to include men and women. And even if Thomas Jefferson did not think it true, we know that all mankind is created equal. And that, of course, includes white folks and black folks and people born in the United States of America and people born in Bangladesh, people born in Slovenia, people born in Madagascar, people born in Antarctica to scientists. In fact, later on, the 14th Amendment would talk about the rights of people who are born, making very clear that once you're born, you have certain inalienable rights. So the Constitution actually perfects the Declaration of Independence when it says that all persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens and have certain rights. Let's get back to real basics. What the heck does it mean to be created equal? In Jefferson's day, men were certainly not born to equal status in life. Some, as I noted, were born to slavery. Others were white men who owned property. And were people like Thomas Jefferson, who had tremendous power. Others were immigrants, people like Alexander Hamilton, who was a poor orphan immigrant, but rose to become one of the most powerful men in the newly formed United States of America. There were, of course, were women. There, of course, were people without property. There were, of course, people that were uneducated. Inequality was not something new. It was permeated. Jefferson's day. There were Native Americans. Frankly, the inhabitants, the indigenous inhabitants of America, for whom the white men gave little regard, except mostly to kill them and take their property. So, again, spare me Jefferson's hypocrisy. I admit it. It's not my point. The point is that the ideas that Jefferson wrote are greater than the man himself. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What does that mean? What does that mean for a liberal? What does that mean for a Democrat? What does that mean for a progressive? What does it mean that we are all created equal when we know that people are not equal? You can walk down the street and see someone who's homeless, mentally ill, muttering to himself or herself, wearing shabby clothes, perhaps in the wintertime, a few hours away from hypothermia and death itself. We know that people all over the planet don't live in the great country that is the United States of America. We know that in some countries, people live better, more equal. To me, when it says that all of us are created equal, it means that we have equal dignity under the law, equal dignity under God, if you believe in God. You don't have to believe in God. Jefferson famously was a deist. He talks about the Creator. He doesn't talk about God or Jesus or Allah or any particular God. You don't have to be believing in any religion to believe in the Declaration of Independence. If your Creator is science and genes and your parents and the society before you that helped you become who you are, you're still endowed with equal rights. All are created equal. So yes, equality is a foundation, a foundational belief in progressivism. I would argue it's the single most important one. It means that all of us are equal under the law, or should be, And when we're not, we have to change the law to make sure that we are. Again, I ain't saying laws are perfect. Remember, the goal was to form a more perfect union. But it means that the essence of our principles and the axiom of equality, we have to work to make our laws more equal. And when they are unjust, we have to make them just. That's what we believe in. It also means equality of opportunity. That each and every one of us who plays by the rules in our Constitution and in the laws derived by the just consent of the governed have to follow those laws. If you don't like the laws, you can't have a revolution. Jefferson makes clear you have a revolution when the laws are unjust. And laws that are unjust are laws that are not derived from the consent of the governed. But if your fellow men and women disagree with you and the majority of them elect candidates who pass laws that you disagree with, well, you just have to work to persuade them to pass other laws. So sorry, leftists, we don't believe in violent revolution, at least not when you have the consent of the governed. Now, Jefferson makes clear that, as he says in the Declaration of Independence, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends of life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the government deriving just power from the consent of the government, when a form of government is destructive of those ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute a new government. Prudence will dictate, this is all in the Declaration of Independence, prudence will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. But when a long train of abuses, when there's a design to reduce people to absolute despotism, it is the people's right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient suffering of these colonies, and now, such is now their necessity, which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. Hence, the colonies can overthrow Great Britain. So, what makes a just government? A government that treats all its citizens equally under the law? A government that gives every one of their citizens an equal chance to succeed? A government that derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. Don't give me the idea that being progressive is something new. Ironically, given that we believe in human progress, we believe in moving forward, some of these ideas are quite old. You might even call them conservative, in that we are conserving not the biases, not the prejudices, but the words of the Declaration of Independence. When the abolitionists fought against slavery, they would cite the Declaration of Independence. When women marched for their right to vote in Seneca Falls, all the way up to people arguing for equal pay for equal work today, they're citing the Declaration of Independence, the birth document of our country, the one thing that brought us all originally all together. These aren't new ideas. But they are critical ideas, and they are just as critical today in 2018 as they were in 1776. I want to talk this hour about what we believe in and why it matters, because if we don't know what we believe in, it's really hard to move forward. We'll be right back right after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it Super Nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Pick up your number two pencils. It's time for Class with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I'm talking today about what we believe in. Let's see if I get it all done in an hour. Not sure. I got too much to say. But it's always important to know where your values come from. Mine start with the Declaration of Independence, which begins, When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. Got it? Every person on the planet, human events, every person has a separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. You can be a believer, you can be an atheist. We all have an equal station on the planet. The equality of human dignity is in the essence of the founding documents of our country. I would argue it's the founding documents of most of the world's great religions as well. The whole idea that we're all descended from one Adam and Eve. More important than the story of the serpent is the story that we are all one people, that all human beings are one. Cain and Abel, right? Next story of the Bible, the idea that we are our brother's keeper. That is essential to religion, just as it is essential to the Declaration of Independence. The idea that we are all equal under the law, that we are endowed by our Creator with equal rights. What does that mean in 2018? What does that mean, equality under the law? Well, surely it means that everyone gets a chance in life. It's not just equality in law, but equal opportunity. Martin Luther King talked about the fact that it's not just that blacks and whites would be treated equally under the law, but that inequality of opportunity mattered. That whether you were born rich or poor, you should have a chance to succeed in life. It can't be that we're all equal and all born to equal station, and be that a brilliant six-year-old born to a poor family has no chance to succeed in life, but has to, I don't know, have some minimum wage job and not make enough to survive, while some idiot born to a very wealthy family, some lazy idiot whose father gives him everything and does nothing of any value, that he should succeed and become a billionaire. That's not fair. That's not equal station. That's why progressives believe in equality. Yet we're not socialists. I'm not a socialist. To me, a liberal believes that everyone has an equal chance to succeed in life. A socialist believes not only that you have an equal chance to succeed, but that we should all have equal outcomes. That no matter what we contribute, no matter how hard we work, we all get the same. That's at least how I would define a socialist and why I'm not a socialist. I do believe that everyone gets a certain minimum. No matter how hard we contribute or how little we contribute, no one should die in this country from starvation. No one should die from inadequate health care. These are things we provide to prisoners, people who've committed murder, awful, terrible people. Why do we give people food? Why do we give people shelter? Why do we give health care if they're a rotten, terrible criminal, the worst of the worst? Well, because we recognize that there's certain basic minimums, and these are things that liberals and socialists agree on. As I said, socialists would argue that we have equal outcomes even at the end of the day. But if we're going to give these things to our prisoners, should we not give them to people who haven't committed a crime? Don't we all have a right to a basic minimum standard? We'll go into that after the break.
When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about what we believe in, what our values are, what my values are, what I hope your values are. My next question is poverty a crime? Should poverty be a crime? Is it a crime to be poor? Again, our Bible says no. And I think all you have to do is look at all the things in Jewish law about providing for the widow and the orphan. All you have to do is look at Jesus throwing the money changers out of the temple, saying the meek shall inherit the earth, and saying it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. So Judaism, Christianity, Islam as well is on the side of the poor, and Buddhism, Hinduism, frankly, all the world's great religions. But, of course, the Constitution is beyond religion. What do we Americans think about poverty? Well, prior to the formation of the United States of America, there were debtors' prisons. You couldn't afford a debt, you went to jail. That was the practice in Great Britain in its time. We abolished that. We abolished that in our Constitution. In fact, the state of Georgia was formed so that debtors would have a place to go to be free of their debts. So you still have to pay your debts, but you know what? If you can't afford them, you can even declare bankruptcy. That's right here in the Constitution of the United States. So we have this principle that being poor is not a crime. And when Jefferson says that all men are created equal and we have equal station in life, again, there's this idea that poverty is not a crime. But what's the reality? Reality throughout American history, what's the reality in 2018? Is poverty a crime today? Well, just look at the fact that poor people go to jail for the same crimes while rich people go free. Rich people can afford better lawyers than the poor. Doesn't it make a mockery of justice to think that you can buy your way out of jail? Poor people are more likely to go to jail for drug crimes, more likely to go to be evicted because they can't afford their rent, and then they have to resort to something to survive. Jean Valjean, the character in Les Misérables by Victor Hugo, famously went to jail for stealing a loaf of bread. Should that be a crime? If you're hungry and you need to eat, will we provide food to people in prison? Should you lose your driver's license for being poor? There are laws on the books in some states today to suggest that if you don't pay your debt or you don't pay a traffic fine, you can lose your driver's license. Now, I understand losing your driver's license because, you know, you've run too many red lights or you've caused too many accidents. But if you lose your driver's license for a parking ticket or a failure to pay a fine due to poverty, then you can't use your car to get money to live. That doesn't make sense. I think poverty is often treated as a crime in America today. And obviously, it's not part of our values. And to the extent that we're unequally treating the laws of justice to favor the rich at the expense of the poor, isn't that against our values as Americans? Our values as human beings, our values whether we are religious people or not? There's a pipeline directly to prison for people in our poor neighborhoods. Think about kids. And remember, it's not the kid's fault to be born in whatever family they're born in. Some 3- and 4-year-olds go to preschool, have parents who are educated and read to them and have time at home to be with them and put them on the greatest foundation for life. And others have parents who, through no fault of their own, are working too many jobs to spend that time with those children. Maybe the parents are at fault. Maybe mom or dad's a bad person. Is that the kid's fault? We begin life unequal, despite the wonderful words of the Declaration of Independence. And that inequality grows over time. One of the reasons why liberals believe in programs like Head Start and education is because we want to equalize it. We know that poor kid, age 4, might just have the cure for cancer if we give her a chance to learn about science. We give her a chance to be educated. We give her the food and, yes, a little bit of love and caring that she needs to survive. Look, we're all born helpless. Again, let's talk about basic human facts. We are all born helpless. The human being, due to the size of our brains, we have to do most of our maturing outside of the womb. That's because of the size of the head and the fact that the birth canal is not that large. So that's why we have a longer period of maturation than virtually any other animal on the planet. We have to grow outside the womb. We have to learn.
and kids get unequal educations based on their unequal backgrounds? Is that our values? Philosophers look at other people to determine what's right. The best philosophers don't say, look at my station in life. They say, look at other people's stations in life and say, how would you feel if the shoe was on the other foot? There but for the grace of God go I, you're supposed to say when you pass a homeless person in the streets. Because we are lucky. We're lucky to be in America. We're lucky to have food in our plates. We're lucky to have clean running water. They don't have that in a number of countries. And to be fair, they don't have it in some communities in the United States of America. Ask the people of Flint, Michigan, largely African American, largely poor, if they should have to suffer because their kids have lead in them that will decrease their mental acuity. Basic equality means looking out for someone other than yourself. Because we're all born helpless on this planet, other people looked out for us. A baby born in the woods dies. We had other people go before us. We had other people help us. We had other people teach us. We had other people feed us. We had other people love us. These principles are not derived from some legalistic thing. These are natural human things. If you've been given all this, you have two choices in life, right? You can give back, recognizing there will be generations ahead of you who will also need to be loved and cared for and educated so that they can go on and help their children and make a better life. One of my favorite little pieces of art is an African sculpture. It has a bunch of people all standing together at the base, and on top of their heads are other people, and on top of their heads are children, and on top of the children is an uneven rock. And it's uneven because the children are still growing and they're still learning, but they sit solidly on the shoulders of their parents and their parents on their parents' parents. That's how society is created. And to me, if you're a liberal, if you're a progressive, you recognize where you came from. You are thankful for what has been given to you. You know that you didn't build everything in your life and you're ready to build something to help the future. To me, the essence of the difference between conservatives and liberals is liberals recognize where they came from and look to where they're going. Conservatives, well, all we have to do is quote perhaps the patron saint of Paul Ryan, Ayn Rand, who talked about the virtue of selfishness. For conservatives, the principle is, I got mine, Jack. Thank you for giving to me. I will now keep it and not give to others. A conservative climbs up the ladder that you've let down and then pulls the ladder up so no one else can climb after him or her. Is that right by any moral standard? Not by any religious standard, and I would argue not by the standards of the Constitution. But the heart of the difference between conservatives and liberals is the battle between I got mine, Jack, and I have a duty to give back to others because so many before us have given to me. And I think if you look at any manner of social programs, look at Social Security, look at health care, look at education, you name it, the heart of the difference is that philosophical difference between I got mine, Jack, I got mine, leave me alone. You helped me get to where I am, but I'm now an adult, and screw you, I'm taking everything you gave, and I'm not giving back. At the heart of conservatism is selfishness. Now, that doesn't mean that people shouldn't have individual responsibility. The famous saying is, you know, you give a man a fish, he eats for a day, you teach a man to fish, and, well, he lives forever. Liberals are all about teaching people to fish, teaching people education, teaching people the skills they need to create their own wealth and give back to their own futures. And sometimes I think liberals are unfairly stigmatized as we just want to give things out to people for free. Education is not that. And a basic food to live, not steaks, not caviar, but basic food to survive, if you can't eat for a day or two or three, you're dead. Again, we provide it to prisoners. But the heart of the difference between us is whether or not we believe we have to give something back to society. And that's something I profoundly believe, and every liberal I know profoundly believes. So you see how equality of opportunity comes directly from equality. And again, I can quote Thomas Jefferson to suggest that all men are created equal, to know that we shouldn't treat people differently according to race or ethnicity or gender or sexual orientation or gender identity. Thomas Jefferson said we have the right to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If someone is more happy as a man or as a woman, what's it to us? What do we care? If you're not transgender, why would you deny someone the happiness of changing their gender? What's it to you? I think one of the differences between liberals and conservatives is liberals believe that people have the right to pursuit of happiness. Again, I'm just quoting the Declaration of Independence. Right? As long as you're not harming someone else, we liberals believe you're free to do what you want to do. That's why we tend to believe in legalization of most drugs, particularly the ones that aren't particularly addictive. Now, if they're addictive, you can make an argument, you know, not marijuana, but cocaine or crack, that you're not freely indulging because once you get addicted, you don't have that freedom anymore. And I take that point. But in general, free activity, freedom to do stupid things, my freedom to throw my arms around and look silly exists as long as there's no one there. Because if someone's face is in front of my fist, I don't have the right to punch them. Now that affects them. So, First Amendment, right? The right to practice your religion. You have a right in the Constitution to free exercise of your religion. But there's no establishment of religion. I can practice religion however I please. I can keep kosher. I can wear a cross. I can eat halal. I can worship goats if I want to, as long as I'm not harming anyone else. Because the moment I tell you, you must worship goats, you must wear a cross, you must keep kosher, you must marry someone of a different gender, you must raise your kids in a certain religion, that's an establishment. That's an imposition on your liberty. Surely my liberty goes only so far as what I can do without harming anyone else. Again, that dates back to the Declaration of Independence. If I have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and you have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, how are we to live one among another? What if your pursuit of happiness is to enslave me? What if your pursuit of happiness is to force me to obey your religion? Well, obviously, there's only one way that both of us can have liberty and the pursuit of happiness, and that is I'll take care of my beliefs and you take care of yours, and we can work to persuade each other through free speech, which is also in the Constitution, but we can't force people to believe things we don't believe. So when it comes to individual thoughts, that's part of the freedoms. Part of the freedoms that liberals believe in derive from, yes, that same good old Declaration of Independence and really the biblical principles that helped to define this nation. And I know a lot of liberals don't talk a lot about the Constitution, the Bible, and I don't know why we don't. Because the foundations of equality, the foundations of freedom of thought, they're right here, folks. They're right here. We'll have more when I come back. So stay tuned. I'll try to get all we believe in the last 10 minutes of the show. Wish me luck.
Schooling the GOP, one hand tied behind his back, the Constitution in the other. It's Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, trying in a radio hour to talk about all we believe in and where it comes from. I think it's important to understand your own values, where they come from, what derives them. When you're looking at a difficult question, sometimes you just have to resort to your values. And one of my great values is that we should have the right to do practically anything as long as we don't harm somebody else. And if we're prevented from doing something because of harm to ourselves, that can be allowed in limited circumstance, but very limited circumstance. We should be careful. We should watch those things carefully. Obviously, someone, a baby, can't look out for themselves. Someone who has a certain mental illness can't look out for themselves. There are people who need the intervention of others to take care of themselves. But that's relatively rare. People who are of sound mind should be able to do anything they want, as long as they don't harm someone else, even if others think it's silly, even if others think it wrong, again, as long as you don't harm anyone else. I look at the environment that way, right? I mean, if folks want to commune in nature, hug a tree, maybe even chop down a few trees, okay. But you can't chop down all the trees, because we have a responsibility to generations after us. We're harming others. That's the difference between something that pleases us and something that harms others. So, yes, clean air, clean water. If you pollute, it may make you feel good about yourself, but it harms others down the line. It goes back to first principles. You can be restricted in what you do if it harms others. Now, with what you're doing has no impact on the environment, then obviously you should be allowed to do it. But environmentalism even comes from this first principle. Frankly, a woman's right to choose comes from the basic principle of you have the right to your own body, the right to decide what you want for your life. Other people can't decide what's harmful to you. Once the baby's born, then you absolutely have to take care of that baby. But when it's intricately part of a woman, until it is separated from the woman, that is her body, that is her agency. She has the right to decide what to do. Gun laws. Again, the problem with gun laws is that such as they are, they allow very dangerous people who have already harmed others to harm others even more. Well, we can restrict on the basis of this harm principle. But really, all these liberal values, they come down to individual rights, to the equal station of all of us as human beings that Jefferson talks about. The word corporation, by the way, is nowhere found in the Constitution. You can even look in the index. You won't find the word corporation. It's not in the Constitution. It's not in the Declaration of Independence. It practically didn't exist in the 18th century. What would the founders think of a corporation that somehow is treated like a person? They'd say that's silly. Humans have rights, not corporations. We can choose to give corporations rights, but they certainly don't have any constitutional rights because they're not human. So they don't have the right to pollute or the right to even free speech. They don't have the right to anything except what we decide to give them the right to do. And that brings us to the consent of the governed, which also is in the Declaration of Independence. To me, consent of the governed means the right of the majority to rule. That's consent of the governed. In 2016, the governed voted, and the majority of them chose Hillary Clinton for president, and a minority chose Donald Trump. We right now are living under a government without the consent of the governed. Do I think the Electoral College is unconstitutional? Well, no, because it's in the Constitution. But do I think it's against the Declaration of Independence? I do. I think it's wrong. I think it is undemocratic. It's one of those things we have to change to form a more perfect union. Our system is not perfect, but if we know our basic values, if we know what we stand for and where they're derived from, at least we can start having these arguments. We can start saying that people are more important than corporations, and that fundamentally, the equality of dignity of all of us, the equality of opportunity, is a basic liberal value from which you can derive all others. I hope you'd enjoyed this show today. This is Mark Levine, signing off.